Broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
What up, good what's up? What up, good? What's good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio. 9:20 a.m. on a hot and sticky Monday, man, in Las Vegas. But it's all good. We're dealing with it. Can't wait to find out who wins the national championship tonight, Gonzaga or Baylor. And can look at it a couple different ways. And I'm going to actually talk about that with our next guest. We're going to go back out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in our good friend Sam Gordon, my teammate from the Las Vegas Review Journal. You can catch him at Vegas Nation on the app or go to VegasNation.com. Just go to LasVegasReviewJournal.com and you'll be able to catch all of Sam's stories and videos. Doing a great job covering UNLV and the Raiders and working out with our guy Jonathan Abram. We all saw that. Sam, first of all, thanks for joining us. How are you doing, my man?
Man, doing good, Vinny. Anytime. I am a little sore from that workout still from a couple weeks back, but we'll persevere. We'll get through it. We'll move on.
Of course. And you more than held your own. You really, in terms of the workout, you know, you held it up for us journalists out here, and I want to thank you for that. Got to dock you some points for the jeans, but I know, and Sam, I'm going to give you the opportunity here because now I know the backstory. I'm going to let you tell it, but you were in kind of a compromising position, but you know what? This is what I respect about our boy Sam. He didn't go to that gym thinking that he was going to work out, but the pressure got put on. They turned the light on a little bit, and Sam did not even blink. And jeans and all went out and put a workout out there. So why don't you tell the story, Sam, of how you ended up working out with Jonathan Abram and Keshawn Nixon in your jeans?
Yeah. So it's funny. I have been in touch with Jonathan's trainer, longtime trainer Deion Hodges, who works with a lot of Raiders in town, a lot of players throughout the NFL, does a great job with those guys. And I just came by to swing through the gym and see how those guys were doing and how kind of the off season was going and to get a feel for everything. And I thought we were just going to chop it up and, you know, do a story or, you know, just, you know, kind of tap in and touch base and see where those guys were at. So I'm hanging out and they're doing their thing. And you know, I'm there just as a, you know, like you said, as a journalist with the hoodie, with the jeans on, with the, you know, the walking around shoes. And, you know, Jonathan and Keyshawn are like, well, come on, you know, and they're motioning me to come over there. And I'm, you know, I didn't even realize it at first. I look up and then they motion me to come over. I said, oh, okay. I look down, I'm in the jeans. I said, okay, well, let me, what do they want? So that's your turn. Let's see what you can do. Let's see what I can do. I went, well, okay, I don't have the attire for this, but I got to step up to the challenge, right? If I'm going to be challenged, you know, as you know, Vinny, I enjoy working out. It's a big part of my life, has been for a long time. And just because I didn't have the attire didn't mean I didn't think I could do the workout. So I had the opportunity to go through some of the movements that they were doing, a couple different movements, a lot of compound exercise, a lot of functional strength type stuff, really, really testing my core, my hamstrings, my quads, everything under the sun. And I did the best I could, Vinny, for us journalists, like you said. I did the best I could, tried to hold my own. But it was a fun time hanging out with those guys and kind of seeing what they go through and seeing what a workout is like, an off-season workout, kind of the preparation that they're putting forth to get ready for the NFL season. And it's, you know, again, I work out a lot, but it's very, very different training when you're a professional athlete. Like I said, a little more functional strength, a little more core stuff that kind of simulates the movements that they're trying to do in games and that simulates preparing for games and the speed and the intensity and the efficiency and all those things. So, you know, I did the best I could, and I told those guys, hey, next time you're going to catch me in some shorts and workout shorts and a t-shirt, I'm going to be ready to go and be ready to do the full thing. So when they invite me back, I'll be ready for the whole workout, and I'm going to do my best to hold my own.
Yeah, man, just, you know, just pack a bag. That's all, you know, so that you could be ready on a moment's notice. Again, though, congratulations for holding it up for us journalists and not worrying about how you look, not worrying about a little uncomfortable. Obviously, jeans, working out in jeans is not conducive, but you more than held your own, and we appreciate that. You know, what I also find, and we're talking to Sam Gordon, our good friend from the Las Vegas Review Journal, what I do find also even more fascinating than you working out in jeans, Sam, was just being able to hang out a little bit with Jonathan Abram. Jonathan Abram has heard all, you know, the criticism he heard. He, you know, he's on Twitter. He sees it all. So there were some struggles last year, no doubt about it. It wasn't exclusive to Jonathan Abram, but he had a couple of moments that really stood out in terms of that. But, you know, it's easy to forget that John was basically playing his rookie year last year. I mean, he played one half of the season opener of his rookie year and then got derailed by a shoulder injury. So, you know, he was kind of thrown into the fire a little bit his second year as a rookie starter. And lots was going on. There were a lot of things that were going on last year. Didn't always look good on film. But where do you see – where is his head at right now? Where is his spirit and his mind? Because so much of this is about that very thing. And where would you – just talking to him and hanging out with them and you know, working out with them, where do you feel like his head is right now?
Yeah, I think just the sense I got, Vinny, is like you said, he knows last year wasn't good enough. And he knows that there's a lot of things that he can improve on, right? Like – Him and his team, his like I said, his longtime trainer, Dion, they're very aware of the criticism and are aware of the areas in which he needs to grow. But I don't think he was deterred by that one bit. You know, the sense I got being around him is he's, you know, still confident, still believes in who he is and what he can bring to the table, and is understanding that, hey, he needs to put forth the work to improve and to continue to grow as an NFL player. And one of the things, you know, he touched on was, like you mentioned, that shoulder injury. That not only did he miss his rookie season, Vinny, but then you have to go through the kind of the whole rehab process and then conditioning and all that. And they're shut down and there's the coronavirus and there's all these things going on that weren't necessarily conducive to his development and his preparation as he got ready for, like you said, what's essentially his rookie season. So while you saw flashes, right, you saw that he could make plays down in the box, that he has the speed, the requisite athleticism, the requisite physical tools to play at this level. He's obviously fearless with his approach, not afraid to go back there and make a big hit behind the line of scrimmage and do things like that. It's really kind of in coverage where he needs to improve and just kind of some of the fundamental stuff, being in the right place at the right time. And I also, in addition to, you know, catching up with Jonathan during the offseason, I also did a story on him towards the end of the season, and he was out with, you know, concussion protocol. So I couldn't talk to him at that time, but I talked to a lot of people, former coaches, people that have been around him at different stages of his life, right? And the thing, the unified theme that I was able to take away from my interactions with them is, this is a kid that loves football and that will put the work in, right? He was a former two-star recruit. He had to work to build himself into an SEC kind of player, and very much did the same thing to build himself into an NFL player. He's a weight room junkie. He studies the film. And he has the drive and the competitiveness to want to be great. And to me, that's a sign, right? Like, yes, he struggled. He didn't have the 2020 season that he wanted to have, but he's undeterred and he understands the concept of work and growth and improvement. And I think when you have some intangibles like that or have that understanding that, hey, it's about the process and the results might not come right away, those are good traits for an athlete to have. And I think that tends to favor improvement down the road. So, he knows he needs to be better, and I really think that the situation with Gus Bradley is going to be a good fit for him, right? It's a cover three system, a little different than what Paul Gunther was doing. He'll probably have his opportunities to be a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage and to make plays in the run game, which is what he does best, and his responsibilities and covers might be simplified a little bit depending on who they get a free safety. And he's still only 24 years old, right? Like, sometimes these things take time, and you know, we want to make judgments on young players or rookies because, hey, there might be a great rookie and some guys pop right away, but other guys don't. And that doesn't mean it's game over for him. He understands it's time to work, time to grow, and I think he's in a situation to do so under Gus Bradley moving forward. So it's a big offseason for him, and he wanted to get through the year healthy, the 2020 season. He did that for the most part, and now he has game tape and things to study on and to improve, and I expect him to do so going into 2021.
We're talking to Sam Gordon. You could follow him at By Sam Gordon. You bring up a really good point. It's one thing when you're a rookie and hurt, in Jonathan's case, in 2019, and you're just watching from afar. And yeah, you're studying film of the opponent. You're studying film of your defense. You're listening to what your defensive coordinator is saying. You're learning all that kind of stuff. But the best way to learn in life, let alone football, is to watch yourself and be coached up, not just for what you've done good, but for what you've done bad. And he never had that. He hasn't had that as an NFL player until last year. So he does have a body of work, good and bad, to be able to now go back on and, you know, sit with his coaches and figure out that's not the way to do it. This is the way to do it. And I think that just that knowledge in general and that body of work and those tools are going to benefit him immeasurably. But as far as you mentioned Gus Bradley, I think a name for Raider fans to keep to remember is Ron Miles, his DB's coach. Not sure how much he got into Ron Miles and the impact that he might have. But I would imagine that there was some conversation that you guys might have had about Gus Bradley and the new defense. Has he shed any light on any of that? Did he shed any light on any of that about Gus Bradley and now working for this new defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't necessarily go into specifics, but he had mentioned to me that he had spoken with Gus Bradley and was excited about the things that they were going to be able to do. And I think one of those things where you look at Gus Bradley is he has a track record, and we've talked about it extensively on our First and Ted podcast, Vinny, on VegasNation.com. He has an extensive track record for player development and putting guys in positions to be successful, accessing a player's strengths, putting him in positions to play to his strengths, and then developing his weaknesses at the same time. So I think that bodes really well for Jonathan Abram. I'm right. Like his strengths are pretty clear at this point. He flies around. He's an instinctual football player that can make plays behind the line of scrimmage. That's a big time hitter, a big time tackler. And where he needs to improve is, you know, fundamentals, kind of discipline, play recognition, situations like that. So I think there's definitely some excitement and a belief in Gus Bradley that Gus Bradley is going to put him in situations where he can succeed and where he can continue to develop as a player. And not only him personally, just with Jonathan Abram, but with the defense as a whole. And I think you look at the additions that they made throughout the course of the offseason, they have Gus Bradley, you know, kind of imprint written all over it. He talked with us at his introductory press conference about how important it is to get after the quarterback and how everything starts with getting after the quarterback and pressuring the quarterback. And as we know, with that young secondary, right, that they had a lot of first and second year guys out in that secondary last season in 2020, there was no semblance of a pass rush. It was non-existent for the better part of the season. And that doesn't help. That doesn't help young defensive backs who are trying to find their footing in the NFL when they can't get after the quarterback, when the front seven can't get after the quarterback or create any kind of pass rush. So there's a lot of optimism about the defense taking a step forward this year, and I know Jonathan Abram is excited to be a part of that and play for Gus Bradley.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you mentioned the imprint of Gus Bradley so far on this defense, and I think it's shown in what they have done, doubling down a couple of times on the defensive line. What is it, four new players that they've brought in? And you can almost count David Irving as a new player. He barely even got on the field last year after coming aboard in October or November. So the doubling down on the defensive line tells you that it was unacceptable last year and they need to get better for all the reasons that you just mentioned. But also what they haven't necessarily done in the secondary, which leads me to believe, they're gonna fill free safety. They'll probably bring in a veteran cornerback or depth, either in the slot or to compete or back up with Damon Arnett. But I think there's a feeling from this defensive coordinator and this defensive coordinator staff that these young secondary players, while they did struggle, and you articulated some of the reasons why, but I think there's a belief that there's something here to work with, because they've certainly not been in any kind of a rush to do any kind of an overhaul in that secondary, whether we're talking about cornerbacks or Jonathan's position, strong safety, understanding that they're going to make a move at free safety. We all understand that. But in and around that, I kind of feel like there's a little bit of a confidence level that Gus Bradley and his staff has in these young players.
As there should be, right? As there should be. Things take time. People develop at a different rate, right? Now, if we go, if we're in the week 12, week 13 of the 2021 season, and we're seeing later in the year that, okay, hey, these guys aren't getting it done. These young players aren't getting it done. There's not, you know, there's been no growth. There's been no development. They're not any better. They've regressed. Then we can revisit this conversation. But the fact remains that a lot of their core, a lot of their defensive backs, part of that young core, is still very, very inexperienced. And again, some guys find their footing right away in our shutdown corners and in big time safeties. You know, the Derwin James of the world, day one. And other guys aren't. Other guys, it takes a little bit longer. And you see all the time, guys emerge in their mid to late 20s as starters and big time players. But having Gus Bradley in the fold, right? Again, developed a lot of big time players, or helped develop a lot of big time players. Was on a big time staff in Seattle. Didn't necessarily have a head success as a head coach in Jacksonville, but what he was able to do is get that defense ready to go, so that when Doug Marrone took over in 2017, they had a defense that was ready to make a move and make a run towards the AFC Championship right away when he got there. So he had a hand in developing that defense, and I think, you know, hiring Gus Bradley, that had to be part of the equation. Is we have a lot of young guys that we want you to kind of tap into and take to that next level. So I would say the jury's still out. Yeah, you know, you certainly wanted to see more from that young group in 2020, but there's still time to get it together and for those guys to take a step forward. And you're right. Based on how they've approached this offseason, to me, it reaffirms a belief that there is more potential there, that there is another level that they can get to, and that, frankly, that pass rush is going to help them improve, right? That's the secondary's best friend is a good pass rush. That wasn't around last year. With the players they added this year, that depth on the defensive line, it should help by proxy those players in the secondary do their jobs at a higher level.
Yeah, and you know, just we talked about this on the podcast, but just, you know, talking to some folks over the weekend, there is a new level of confidence in that front seven. And when we talk about front seven, obviously the front four and the rotation that they've built with that front four, but also behind them with the linebackers, with Corey Littleton and Nick Wachowski and Nicholas Morrow coming back intact. It's the first time since John Gruden came back that his linebacker crew is coming back from 1 year to the next. And there's been optimism and confidence expressed in that front seven, as Sam has mentioned. That should, if that group improves and they're able to get pressure on the quarterback, and also as linebackers defend in the pass game, it's just going to help the young secondary. So it goes hand in hand. But before we let you get out, Sam, we talked last week. It's another 7 days since the last time we spoke together on this show. Still no movement at right tackle. Are you starting to get the feeling that this is a more than anything a position that they're going to address in the draft?
Yes, absolutely. Just based on kind of, you know, the reading the tea leaves and how they've handled everything, there's clearly been a move to get a little younger on that offensive line, and I don't think they would have made the moves that they made without having some semblance of a plan. And you just locked up your left tackle, Colton Miller, who I thought has continued to improve over the first, you know, few years of his career. You lock him up on the left side. You solidify Derek Carr's blind side moving forward for the next few years. Go do the same thing on the right side with one of these top offensive tackle prospects. Maybe the first round, right? You certainly wouldn't be opposed to that, but the second round, too. There's a lot of depth in this offensive line class. And you plug in another young starter, somebody that can come in and start day one right away. You know, like I mentioned before, look at what Tampa Bay did, you know, hitting on Tristan Wirfs. And on that right side of their line, they're good as long as he stays healthy for the next 10, 12, 14 years, right? There's a world in which the Raiders can do that, find their own version of Tristan Wirfs. Now, I don't know if whoever they draft is going to be quite that good, because he's one of the best players at his position right away. But there's a world in which they do find a player that is that good. And then you're set at left tackle, you're set at right tackle, you manage your guard situation, and you figure that out long term, and then you have a possible center of the future in Andre James as well. So it totally, to me, feels like right tackle is the move in the draft at some point, and I'm fine with that, right? You got a little bit, you get a little younger, you set yourself up for the next few years, and you continue to build around that offensive line, which has been a strength the last few years. Despite the weaknesses that the team has had elsewhere, offensive line has been a strength, and Tom Cable has a track record for doing this. He's done it for a long time, and I think he'd do well with a rookie starting at right tackle.
We're talking to Sam Gordon from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. You can follow him at @bySamGordon. All right, Sam, as a fellow hoopaholic like myself, kind of a big game coming on tonight between Gonzaga, trying to hold it up for the West Coast, and Baylor. Doing their thing for the great state of Texas. Do you have a gut feeling on how this winds up? I'm going to throw just one thought at you on my end. I think Gonzaga, you know, a lot of times in these tournaments, you're going to get a haymaker at some point along the way. And the key is, do you survive it or not? And obviously, UCLA threw a haymaker and then some at Gonzaga, had them on the ropes, but weren't able to knock them out. I almost think that when that happens, and it did happen to Gonzaga, and they obviously survived, you almost get a sense of nobody can beat you. If you can survive that, then you're going to survive anything. And I just feel like that might be what we see from the Gonzaga team tonight. But your thoughts on what might unfold tonight in the NCAA championship game?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. First and foremost, I want to say I think this is the right matchup. I think so many times we see this tournament play out where you don't get the two best teams. You might get one of them and then another team that got really hot or something like that. But in this instance, I think you have the two best teams in the country. And I think for both teams, it really starts with their guards. And Gonzaga, you know, we can talk about their offense all day. It's one of the best in the history of college basketball. They don't have an offensive weakness. But to me, it starts with Jalen Suggs, the outstanding freshman, and then you have Andrew Nembhard and Joel Ayayi, multiple ball handlers, multiple guys that can do multiple things, handle the ball, play off the ball. They're unselfish. They move it. They get great shots seemingly every trip down the floor. Baylor, on the other hand, they have great guards too. It just might look a little different, right? Davion Mitchell, Jared Butler, Maceo Teague, all those guys are fantastic. It's a veteran backcourt. And Baylor, I think to me, when you break down this matchup, they have the defensive chops to make Gonzaga's guards really work and really really have to go through their stuff on offense. So that, to me, is what I'm going to be watching. That's the focal point of the matchup. I do think Gonzaga has a bit of an edge, a slight edge, with the post play of Drew Timmy, because if stuff does break down on that perimeter, they can go to Drew Timmy, throw it down to him, and he's as good of a post player as there is in the country. Kind of a throwback old-school big man, right, Vinny, with the footwork. You know, maybe something like a Kevin McHale guy that you've seen and seen play plenty of times and know quite well. So it's a great matchup. It's a compelling matchup. But I think the Zags are a team of destiny based on what I saw. Like you said, they took a haymaker. I don't think that was an A-plus game by them, and they figured out a way to win. And that was a really good game by UCLA. They played phenomenally. But the Zags take that punch. They're still standing, and I expect them to still be standing later tonight. I've been on them all year. That's kind of been my team. I popped on the bandwagon in part because Jalen Suggs is from Minnesota, where I'm from, and watching him and following his journey, it was really cool to see him have his moment. But even Minnesota connection aside, this is a historically great team, and they're going to have their chance to make history tonight. I expect them to get it done in an instant classic. I got the Zags winning something like 85-80, 85-79, close game, but the Zags pulled out.
Well, I was going to take you to Jalen Suggs and the St. Paul and Minneapolis connection, but you beat me to the punch. But you also snuck in Kevin McHale, as a good Minnesota kid because he's the ultimate. I got some Kevin McHale stories. But anyway, one day. But yes, I'm glad you mentioned the Minnesota connection. Jalen Suggs is a ball player. Would have loved to see him play some football, but obviously I think he made the right choice. And I think he's NBA bound without question. But what a night for your fellow Minnesotian. That's how you say it, right? Minnesotian? Am I right?
Minnesotan,
no, yes, there you go.
Yeah, Minnesota. You got it. Yep, you got it.
You must have been proud on Saturday, just being, that you guys are from the same neck of the woods. But congratulations on that end of it. Let's hope for a great game. Sam, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Really appreciate it, as always. Have a great week, and enjoy the game tonight, my brother.
Anytime, Vinny. Appreciate you having me. Talk soon.
All right. Sounds good. Sam Gordon from the Las Vegas Review Journal always does a good job. And of course, he was going to sneak in some Minnesota love. He went to the University of Minnesota, as did Kevin McHale. And obviously, he was going to throw some love to Jalen Suggs from St. Paul, Minnesota. I can't wait for this game tonight. You're in the huddle. Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Well, you know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and down, throw my hands up and down, throw my head back and down.
I see you, Damon, and I like it. You're in the huddle of Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador Raider Nation Radio on a Monday. It is championship night. Who do you got? Gonzaga holding it up for the West Coast. And you know, I know I'm in Nevada now, but it takes me like, what, 30 minutes to get to California, literally. So I know it's that part of California, but whatever. We are on the West Coast. And so I think heart-wise, I'm going to go with Gonzaga. Love what Mark Few has done there. Has stayed true to the Pacific Northwest. I love Spokane. It's one of those cities that you go and have some fun. It is a fun town. Trust me when I say that. And so you know that's where Gonzaga is. So I'm going to go with Gonzaga. But man. Baylor can ball, too. This would be a heck of a game. It should be a heck of a game. Hopefully, everybody brings their A game, because if it is, as Sam Gordon mentioned just a little while ago, you could be talking about one of those all-time great thrillers, because this is a fascinating matchup against two really good teams. I love the tenacity and the grit of Baylor. They've got some talent, obviously. So it should be a really, really fun game, and I am looking forward to it just a little while from after the show for tip-off. My Mets are finally playing. Yeah, I'm a New York Met fan, and I wear that proudly. Obviously, their opening series, if you're not a baseball fan, their opening series was completely wiped out due to COVID and the Washington Nationals having a little bit of an outbreak with COVID-19, and so that wiped out the opening series, and so it was kind of a stress-free weekend for me, not having to worry about my Mets. But now they're playing today. They're winning 2-0. But gosh, it comes at you like that. Like it's not, you know, no stress. All of a sudden, your team's playing a real game, and all of a sudden, you're beside yourself. So crazy how it all works out. But I love that feeling. So now I got to get ready for hopefully 162, and maybe then some with the playoffs. The Mets might be in a pretty good place this year, but we'll see. My thanks to Sam Gordon for always bringing the heat and the insight. One of the best young journalists out there. Really proud to call him a teammate and to work with him. Want to thank Willie Snead, obviously, for coming on, the new Raiders wide receiver. And if you listen to the interview, and we'll put the podcast out later on, if you weren't able to join us at 4:30 when he came on. But I think that Willie Snead, I just have this sneaky suspicion that he's going to be have a bigger impact than Raider fans might just initially think. It might not translate itself with a whole bunch of numbers, but just what he brings to the table as a player and a person, the kind of ruggedness and fearlessness, unselfishness that he brings, how he's going to be able to fit into this offense. Remember, we talked about this earlier, but keep in mind where he was before he played, in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson and that crew and that kind of an offense. You couldn't ask for, you couldn't get two more distinctly different offenses than the Baltimore Ravens and the New Orleans Saints. And I love football for this fact, much like any other sport, but in football in particular, there's just so many different ways that you can win. There's so many ways that you can attack opponents. I love the fact that it's not just cookie cutter. It's not a cookie cutter league, and it's getting less and less like a cookie cutter league. The more we evolve, the game evolves and strategies evolve, and what they're doing in college football, how the influence that's having on the professional level, the different skill sets now that we're seeing at quarterback, and there's so many different ways now to attack teams based on who your quarterback is and what the skill set is of your quarterback. And obviously, going from Drew Brees in New Orleans to Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, both fantastic quarterbacks in their own right, do things a little bit differently, obviously. And so the offenses are going to be structured a little bit differently. And so the offense that Willie played with in Baltimore was vastly different than what he played with in New Orleans. And the offense that he's coming to with the Raiders is much more like the offense that he played with in New Orleans. And I think it's going to be kind of a seamless transition for him coming out here, because for that very reason. And if you look at what he did in New Orleans, you know, his best years, 2015 and 2016. 2015, 101 targets, 69 catches, 984 yards, 14.3 yards per reception, three touchdowns. 2016, again, this is with Drew Brees in that offense, which is a vastly different offense, obviously, than Baltimore. 104 targets, 72 receptions, 895 yards, 12.4 yards per catch, four touchdowns. And the next year, it looks like he was hurt, so he didn't, just didn't get as much production. But he goes to Baltimore in 2018, and I wonder who was the quarterback in 2018 for Baltimore. Let's just check that out, because I could see where his numbers start going down a little bit in 2018. Who was the quarterback in Baltimore in 2018? It was Joe Flacco played nine games. And then Lamar Jackson played seven. So it was kind of half and half, right? And so you could tell that a change starts occurring Willie's numbers. They go down a little bit. Why? Well, they run a different offense in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. It's a much more run heavy, kind of a pound it and use Lamar Jackson as a thrower and as a runner. And so his numbers, Willie Snead's numbers in 2018, go to 95 targets for 62 receptions, 651 yards, 10.5 yards per catch. Then 2019, 46 targets in 16 games, 11 starts. 2020, 48 targets. And I could tell Willie Snead just a second ago at 4:30 when we had him on. He mentioned it a couple of times. He did what he was supposed to do in the offense that he was in. And that Lamar Jackson, Baltimore offense, the way it's structured, the way they attack people, and that it's a winning formula in Baltimore, and they're winning big games and going to the playoffs. But you could tell that I'm not going to say that he didn't like it, because I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but you can read between the lines and how he was like, hey, you know, did what I could in that offense and did what I was supposed to do in that offense. But I think he kind of welcomes the opportunity now to get back to an offense that's more like the one he played in New Orleans. And you look at the numbers that he put up in New Orleans. And guys, we're talking about a guy who started eight games in 2015 out of the 15 that he played, and started four games out of the 15 that he played in 2016. Yet nevertheless, and this is why I say, hey, you can't, Hunter Renfrow might be the starter, but he's going to put his numbers up. But in this kind of an offense, the offense that Willie was in New Orleans, and now the offense that he's in here in Las Vegas, with two kind of similar quarterbacks in how Derek Carr commands him at the line of scrimmage, figures out the mismatches, and attacks in the pass game, spreading it around, getting into a whole bunch of different wide receivers, is much more like what they did, the West Coast offense in New Orleans. Both can win games. Obviously, look at Baltimore. You know, they've been in the playoffs for, 3 years running now? So what they're doing works for them, and Lamar Jackson is a tremendous quarterback, and the way they attack is effective, but it's just different. There's just different ways to skin a cat, and now you have Willie coming to this offense, which is more like what he ran in New Orleans, and I think there's going to be a lot of what you saw in New Orleans, where guys are being utilized and tapped into with a quarterback. Kind of, you know, I look at Derek Carr much like Drew Brees. They're sort of point guard quarterbacks. You know, they're getting the ball. It's kind of like the Steve Nash, Chris Paul philosophy of quickly getting the ball to the right guy. You ever see how many easy baskets, Chris Paul gets for teammates? Steve Nash got for teammates, Magic Johnson got for teammates, by just getting the ball to them in the right place at the right time, in stride, so that, you know, it's on the money and they're in stride so that they could do things with the ball after they catch it. That's the kind of quarterback that Derek Carr is ascending to. That's the kind of quarterback Willie was playing with the Saints. So you could tell the excitement in his voice about getting back to those type of roots. And I think for a lot of those reasons, a guy like Willie Snead is going to be a much bigger player in this Raider offense than I think some Raider fans might suspect. And it's again, everyone's going to get their numbers. Everyone gets their numbers in this type of offense when you've got that point guard kind of quarterback and mentality in Derek Carr, and how it's structured, and how they attack opponents. You're still going to get the run game. You're still going to get the heavy dose of power football with Josh Jacobs and kind of a change of pace, do it all kind of a guy like Kenyon Drake, who could also line up and attack you as a receiver, kind of like what they do in New Orleans, with their running backs, and how they have that kind of balance between the power run and the guy that can, you know, hit you in the seams, but then also be somebody that you can exploit in the pass game. There's a lot of what Kenyon Drake does that, you know, the running backs in New Orleans were able to do. And you start envisioning that and understanding that this Raiders offense could be moving toward something along those lines. So I think he's going to be a player that has a bigger impact than people think, and that goes beyond, again, just the receiving yards and the production. He's going to be a guy that his influence in the locker room, what he brings to the table from all of his experiences now, playing for the Saints, playing in that winning environment, going to Baltimore with a guy like Lamar Jackson and his talents and his leadership and the ruggedness that is expected of, what did he say, playing like a Raven. I can see that kind of being a play like a Raider type of a thing where they have that sort of a mentality. But a Kenyon Drake can be your Alvin Kamara kind of a guy, you know, where he's running and catching and playing off of a Josh Jacobs. You start thinking about that offense and how much more effective it can be, especially in the areas that we've identified with the red zone, scoring touchdowns rather than settling for field goals. I think John Gruden has a vision for all this, and I think it's starting to come together. Even when we're scratching our heads sometimes, and some people have been with some of the moves, there's a vision for this offense, and I can kind of see where he's headed with it. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Sorry, guys. I'm sending an important text here. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor. Brought to you by Tequila Embajador. This is how it works as a reporter. There's a lot of texting. I'm telling you that right now. But that's what you got to do. I think back to the days when I first started, as a reporter, or even 15 years ago, 20 years ago, how things have changed. Like trying to get a hold of somebody back in the day, like you'd have to. Without cell phones, let's go to the time when there wasn't cell phones, right? Yes, I was a reporter at that point, you guys. And it was a hustle, man, and a hassle. Sometimes trying to get a hold of people. You had to, like, literally catch them at home or, that's it. There were no cell phones. Like, there was no other way to get a hold of people. And so now I could just text. I'm not going to tell you who I just texted, but it's pretty high up there. on the old food chain. But it's so easy now, you know, and you can at all hours of the day, which I'm sure not everybody appreciates, but you know, you have to be professional and reasonable when you're talking about somebody's time and the fact that there's off time and off hours and things like that. But it's just instantaneous. Like, it's like you can literally get a hold of who you need to get a hold of pretty darn quickly. And there's just so many different ways to be able to get at people these days. It makes the job a little bit easier, but it also makes it a little bit, you know, more challenging. And I'll tell you why. Like, you don't think that I know that I'm competing with Vic Tafer from The Athletic, who I love, a good friend of mine. But we're going to go toe-to-toe. I think both of us and, you know, Tayshaun Reed, the same thing over at The Athletic, and everyone else here in Las Vegas and nationally and all that type of stuff, you're competing with those people. That's part of this whole business. And we all have egos, and we all have, we want to win. First and foremost, I tell people that I cover, I tell people that read my stories, people that listen to my radio show, first and foremost, I'm just trying to get it right. Like, I want to tell the most accurate and timely, but more so accurate story about the team that you guys all love, the Raiders, as I possibly can. And sometimes that means, taking a minute or two to confirm something, like with my own sources. Like, I have my own sources. I know, you know, that Ian Rappaport is going to report something typically off of something that he gets from an agent. And I get that, and I understand that. If I was an agent, that's how I would do it too. You get it out to one person, either Ian Rappaport or, the ESPN reporter, National Football Reporter, and get it out in one lump sum, and that person will send it out to the masses. But I can't always rely, you know. Sometimes I will get it myself, too, on some of the more local stories. No question about that. But in terms of, like, a signing or something like that, it's usually going to go, to the Adam Schefters and the Ian Rappaports, the national guys that the agents deal with directly. And I get that. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to, if I happen to see it on their Twitter feed first, I'm not going to rely on. I like Adam Schefter and what he does, and I respect him, and same with Ian Rappaport. You think I'm going to rely on that guy? I have to do my own due diligence, and I always bring up these examples of Gabe Jackson and Rodney Hudson. How many, and Marcus Mariota, for that matter. How many times did you see tweets about those guys getting cut, getting released? And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Based on my sources, that hasn't happened yet. They're still on the roster. They're not getting released. They may get released, but I can't confirm that. And I'm not. And who I'm talking to is like, no, I don't know. What's going on with that? But that's not what's happening. That's not what has happened. And so, just a little backstory on that end of it. But it that whole texting thing and being able to get at people instantaneously is a challenge for reporters because. You know, look, like I said, I go toe-to-toe with Vic, and he's tremendous at what he does. But, you know, he might just text somebody 5 minutes before I do or just have a train of thought like, hey, I got to check in on that and get something that I don't have because, you know, he was able to get to somebody just like that on something that he might have been working on. And so, and then my editor's like, hello, time to get to work or whatever the case might be. How come that paper has this or whatever the case might be. So you got to get on it. So it makes the job a little bit easier, but there's also a little bit more anxiety and a little bit more, it makes it a little bit more difficult because you have to be on 24/7. What is it? It's 5:52 on a Monday and I'm texting somebody about something and but hey, my wife doesn't really like it all the time, of course, but it is what it is. And you have to do what you got to do to be good at this job. And I try to be the best I possibly can. And that's all I ever promise you guys. I'm going to be accurate as I possibly can, even if it means not getting something out first. I've seen time and time again where people get something out there first, and it might not be the most accurate account of what's going on. So you got to be careful at all times. But it's fun and. You know what we're talking about sports. How serious can it possibly be? It's pretty serious, when it comes to expectations and trying to get you guys information as quickly and as accurately as possible. I take great pride in that. But there is a little bit of anxiety because a lot of people want to write about the Raiders. A lot of people want to, you know, chime in about the Raiders, you know, whether it's nationally or locally or wherever. Bloggers, people that think that they're in the know, you know, because they got a YouTube channel or something like that, and you know, kind of coming at you sometimes. Whatever, it's all good, and I get it. But as long as we do it all respectfully, that's really what matters. And if you're a young reporter out there that wants a little advice, I don't care if you're covering the Raiders or the Patriots or anybody else, I'm always available. We can compete, but that doesn't mean we can't be friends, and that doesn't mean we can't have help each other out a little bit. And if you need any advice or whatever, you could always hit me up. I just want to say thanks to Willie Snead, the Raiders' new wide receiver. Really enlightening stuff talking to him earlier today. I want to say thanks to Sam Gordon from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Damon Cotton, appreciate you. Everything that you do, my brother, you know that. Keep the great music coming. You got to study up a little bit on baseball, but you'll get there. I have full confidence because I know how much you want it, Damon. I know how much it means to you. I want to say thanks to all the callers, or we didn't have any callers today, but that's all good. A Monday on Championship Monday, I get it. Want to say thanks to all the listeners. You're why we do this. We will talk to you tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. in the huddle, brought to you by Tequila and Bajador. Enjoy the game. Talk to you guys later.
Lincoln Black Label is your invitation to a uniquely elevated automotive experience revolving around you, including pickup and delivery, premium maintenance, vehicle care, Lincoln Concierge, travel collection, and culinary collection. Finley Lincoln is here to surprise and delight you all the way through your effortless experience. Thinking Lincoln? Then think Finley Lincoln in the Valley Auto Mall, Nevada's only standalone Lincoln Black Label dealership.
It's the Rich Eisen Show.
It's just amazing how you get into it and you don't have anything to really focus on other than just the excitement of it and the players and how they get into it. And you learn the stories about organizations and schools and coaches and players and sisters and nuns and all that stuff. And you're just locked in.
Tune in weekdays at 10 for the Rich Eisen Show here on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. Get access to the Las Vegas Raiders like never before. Go Inside the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor weekdays at 4 on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. Make your voice heard here on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM all day long. Text us at the Sam and Ash text line at 69187. Visit them at samandash.com because you deserve what's right. This is R&R 920 AM. Wake up with Pritch and Clay weekday mornings from 7 to 10 here on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. JT the Brick.
Thrilled to talk to Steve Sylvester. Joins us once a Raider, always a Raider.
They're close. They're really close, and they're going to get better. And John Gruden, I mean, obviously when you see them play, they play hard. They play the last second, and it's really great to watch. It'll be great when they start winning, rating at a high level, and consistently at a high level. It's going to be great.
It's JT the Brick, weekdays at noon on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. You can listen to Raider Nation Radio from anywhere in the world. Download the Raiders app or listen live at lbsportsnetwork.com. Just because the season is over doesn't mean you won't get the best Raiders coverage anywhere around. Keep it locked right here on the home of Raider Nation. Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. Strong takes and the biggest guests. Join JT the Brick weekdays at noon on Raider Nation Radio. It's the Rich Eisen Show.
Is that part of the new general managing? Is just pick your spots. You got yourself a team. You got yourself a championship team. Wait for another team to either no longer need the older player or realize they're not going to pay the older player. Wait till they're bought out and construct your own all-star team. That's the NBA for you right now, and it stinks. I think it stinks.
Tune in weekdays at 10 for the Rich Eisen Show here on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. Stay informed on the latest breaking news from the NFL offseason on the Rich Eisen Show, weekday mornings at 10 on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM.
He's one of the preeminent voices in all of the NFL. Tune in weekdays at 10 for the Rich Eisen Show for a daily dose of breaking sports news and the biggest guests here on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. Go in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy. Afternoons at 4 on Raider Nation Radio. Go inside the huddle.
Inside the huddle.
What I suggested was a four-year contract extension for $80 million. Okay, but in reality is, the reality of that is you're tacking on two more years of his contract.
It's In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy. A daily look inside the Raiders locker room. Weekday afternoons at 4 on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Never miss another show. Stream us live or listen to past podcasts 24/7 at lbsportsnetwork.com. This is Raider Nation Radio 920 AM, KRLV Las Vegas.
Sky Diamonds offers an unmatched diamond jewelry experience. Your direct diamond importer is giving you access to the world's most dazzling diamonds, straight from the best diamond mines. From half a carat to 6 carat diamonds and even larger, Sky Diamonds has it all. And you